Chapter 9. Opportunity. January. Like many turning points in a life, especially in the life of a lonely kid who stuck mostly to himself, playing a beat-up violin his grandmother had given him, Ray's life changed because someone else reached out across the gulf and touched him. Later, much later, Ray stumbled across a quote that reputedly came from Whoopi Goldberg. We're here for a reason. I believe a bit of the reason is to throw little torches out to lead people through the dark. Ray would type it up and stick it on his refrigerator with a local realtor's giveaway magnet, and the paper would curl up at the ends and brown. And every morning when he'd pull out his orange juice, he would see it hanging there, and for an instant he'd pause and be grateful. He found the torch that would lead him through the darkness at the auditions for the North Carolina Regional Orchestra, Eastern Division. Regional Orchestra was a very big deal. He'd never auditioned before and never thought he had much of a chance. 200 violinists vying for 40 spots. He was one of three black musicians out of the 392 trying out and the only black violinist. But none of that would stop him from trying out. After the auditions, as he waited in the cafeteria with Aiden and a couple other kids, someone tapped Ray's shoulder. A short, thin woman with an electric smile beamed back at him. She was in her early 40s with a few gray strands curling in her black hair. She wore jeans and a blazer. He couldn't figure out where he knew her from. She looked very familiar. And then he realized that she was one of the judges at the audition. The only black one.
Hello, young man.
Hello, ma'am, Ray said, instinctively standing up straighter and adjusting his shirt.
I'd like to say that I enjoyed your audition.
You did? Thank you. Ray could feel Aiden looking at him, but he kept his gaze on the judge. I'm sorry about that F sharp in the D minor scale.
No need to apologize. I used to miss that F all the time when I was starting out.
You play violin?
I do. I'm Dr. Janice Stevens. I'm an associate professor of violin at Markham University.
Ray stood frozen with his mouth slightly open. Aiden nudged his ribs.
I just wanted to introduce myself and wish you the best of luck. You're both wonderful musicians, she said to them.
After she left, Aiden said to Ray,
Dude, that's got to be a good sign.
Yeah, maybe. But Ray's heart beat a little harder. She'd come up and talk to him. That must mean something, right? Close to an hour and a half later, a scrawny man with bushy eyebrows came out with a piece of light blue paper, the violin selection list. He thumbtacked it to the bulletin board. Then he heard Mark Jennings' voice from the crowd.
No fucking way.
An instant later, Aiden called out,
Ray, you made it. Bro, you made it.
Ray's name was among the chosen. Both Aiden and Mark Jennings emerged from the kids, still straining to see the list. Mark's eyes were narrow.
How the hell did you make it? He said to Ray. Is this an affirmative action audition?
Shut the fuck up, Aiden told him.
You mad because you left your white supremacist starter kit on the bus?
Fuck you, Asia. He shot Aiden the bird.
See this? Open your eyes. Oh, wait. They are open.
Asshole, Aiden said. But he was used to Mark slamming his Asian looks, the way Mark would slam Ray's. Mark was an equal opportunity racist. Aiden was beaming, pounding Ray on the back.
You made it. Dude, you totally made it.
Dr. Stevens appeared again. There was that smile, so bright.
Congratulations, Raekwon. Quite an accomplishment. This is a very difficult orchestra to get into. What year are you?
I'm a senior.
Who are you currently taking lessons with?
Like a private teacher, he said.
Nobody.
Just Mr. Stinson, our orchestra teacher. I've never done private lessons.
You mean Gary Stinson?
Yeah, I think that's him, Ray said.
She looked at him even more intently.
He practices, like, all the time, Aiden interjected. The guy is glued to his violin.
Yeah, he said. I like playing. He shot Aiden a grateful look, but Aiden was watching Dr. Stevens.
Well, you've been doing a great job, she told him. What are your plans for next fall?
You mean after I graduate?
Yes.
Going to find a job, he said, inventing on the spot. Maybe the military.
Have you considered college?
I've thought about it, he said, although he never really had.
But I wouldn't know what to do. Plus all the student loans.
Popeye still loomed.
I'm asking because you're a very good player, and you obviously work hard. Your vibrato was beautiful, and your musicianship was exquisite. When you played, it definitely woke us up.
She reached into her purse.
Here's my card. I'd really love for you to consider applying to Markham University. You'd be one of my students.
Her card sat in his fingers like a butterfly wing, about to disintegrate if he squeezed too tightly.
I know this may be overwhelming, but it could be a real opportunity. If someone had gotten a hold of you when you were younger, you could be playing solos with major symphonies by now.
He had to clear his throat before he could speak.
Thanks. Thank you, Dr. Stevens. You're very welcome, Raekwon. I can feel how much potential you have. I hope to hear from you soon. Congratulations again.
Both Ray and Aiden stared after her. Then Aiden punched Ray's shoulder.
Whoa! Bro, this is amazing! Major symphony, you hear that? There might be a scholarship for you. This is your lucky day.
The bus ride home was a blur. When they pulled over to a fast food restaurant for dinner, and Ray was away from the noise of the bus, he called his grandmother.
That's wonderful, baby, she told him.
He didn't think she quite understood what regional orchestra was, but she was happy for him nonetheless. He was beyond exhausted and still dizzy with excitement when he unlocked the front door to his house. His mom had left a lamp on next to the couch, its glow glittering on the glass coffee table, pouring over the red, blue, and green swirls of the faded upholstery. The room felt unfamiliar, as if he'd been gone for a very long time. A light was on in his mother's room. She was lying in bed on the phone.
Mom! Guess what? I made it. I made regionals.
She stared at him blankly for a moment.
Stop screaming like you ain't got no sense. You locked the front door.
On Friday, February 8th, all the students for the regionals concert assembled in the auditorium to begin the first rehearsal before blind auditions that would decide their seatings the next morning. Ray sat in the back of the violin section, trying to keep calm, trying to keep his lips in a straight line, trying to pretend he'd done this 100 times before. Two other black students sat together on the other side of the room. As the organizers, the teachers, and the conductor introduced themselves, the black kids caught his eye. He gave them a "what's up" nod. During their first break, Ray headed toward them. Sean from Fayetteville played trumpet, and Janelle from Chapel Hill was a bassoonist. Janelle had played in regionals last year, but this was Sean's first time. They decided to have dinner together that night. It was really great to sit with other black musicians at dinner. In Charlotte, he was the only black kid in orchestra, and there were only 3 other black kids in his grade. Ray had never befriended any of them. They were more interested in hip-hop. His love of classical music made him an outcast to the group. His violin case alone assured this. Plus, it seemed that his classes didn't align with any of the other black kids at school, so somehow he'd never gotten close to any of them. It felt awesome to sit with other black teenagers who, like him, loved classical music. None of the other students,
all of whom were either white or Asian, with a couple Hispanic kids peppering the crowd, spoke to or sat next to the three of them. When Ray got a second glass of lemonade, he overheard a couple boys loudly saying something about affirmative action and meet a quota. Sean and Janelle didn't seem bothered by any of this, though. Janelle, like Ray, was a senior and deciding between UNC and NC State. Sean was only a junior and was in the middle of college tours with his parents.
How do you decide where to go? Ray asked Janelle. I think I'm leaning towards State. They have a better biology department.
You aren't doing music?
I'll probably keep playing, but I'm not going to major in it.
Oh, he said. He was a little amazed that someone so talented wouldn't be majoring in music.
How's about you? Sean asked.
Still thinking about college, Ray said.
Haven't applied anywhere yet. Might have one option. What do you want to do? Music?
Ray couldn't, in all honesty, imagine majoring in anything except music. He shrugged.
Why do you want to do biology? You sound amazing. Thanks. That's just not realistic for me. How many black bassoonists you see in orchestras? It's already cutthroat. I'm not gonna fight it. A few years ago, when I auditioned for this group, my teacher was actually one of the judges. One of her other students was auditioning, too. Ashley Hawkins. Blue eyes, blonde. I beat her at band auditions for years. The other kids that auditioned hadn't been playing that long, so I knew I could beat them. When it came down to it, the judges chose Ashley.
I don't get it, Ray said.
Janelle and Sean looked at each other, laughed, pointed at the tops of their hands. Then, only then, did Ray remember Uncle Roger all over again.
You seriously thinking of doing music?
Sean asked him, pushing aside the last fries on his plate.
A career in music would be awesome, Ray said. Good luck with that one, Janelle said. Look around. There are only three of us in this entire orchestra. You'd be better off majoring in something that's going to make you some money. You have to think about your future. This music thing is for the white kids who can afford the instruments and the big-name teachers. We don't have much of a chance. My parents are really pushing me toward medicine.
Mom want me to be a lawyer, Sean said.
Wow. I never thought about it that way. I just like playing. But if I could actually make a career out of it, I don't know.
His mother's voice echoed in his head.
When you gonna stop all that shit?
When would he? A world without playing his violin seemed to loom raw, gray, and empty. His expression must have betrayed how he felt, because Janelle said, as if comforting him,
Well, maybe a scout will recruit you.
Scout?
Yeah, of course. Haven't you seen them? Some of them have been here all weekend. They're mostly looking at the seniors. They find out where you're planning on going, then try to convince you to go to their schools. Funny thing is that a lot of these kids aren't even planning on studying music.
In the next morning's auditions, the judges wouldn't see the competitors, only hear them. When it was Ray's turn, he entered the green room adjoining the stage that had been converted to an audition room. Down the center of the room, blocking the other side from view, an enormous white plastic sheet hung from the ceiling. Three sets of legs were visible below, two sets in trousers, and one set wearing pantyhose and high heels. In the center of the open space before him, a lone music stand beckoned. On it lay a single sheet of music, the Offenbach solo. Ray swallowed. He knew he could play the notes, but making this solo sound good was a real challenge. Although the Berlin Philharmonic performance was the best one he'd found online, it was still a rougher recording than he wished it had been. Why hadn't he spent more time studying a better recording?
No time to think about it. No time to second guess. He lifted Pop-Pop's fiddle to his jaw, closed his eyes, and dove in. The solo came from Orpheus and the Underworld, a spiky, brittle moment in the lushness of the rest of the piece. High-soaring phrases leaping like frogs from one high note to the next. He pressed his jaw against the chin rest, tried to make the solo lilting and effervescent, imagining beetles scaling trees, birds lifting off one branch and alighting on another higher branch, looking out at the view, and then leaping even higher. 1 minute later, it was over. After dinner, the conductor, in a quick monotone, read out the results of the auditions, starting with the second violins. This was Ray's first blind audition. For the first time, he'd be placed according to how well he played the music. No one had an unfair advantage. The conductor didn't call Ray's name. Had he made first violin?
First violins, your seating is as follows. Jenny Carlson. Congratulations. You're the concert mistress.
A tiny red-headed girl two seats over from Ray would be playing the Offenbach solo. She screamed and hugged her stand partner. In the commotion, Ray didn't hear the next names ring out. The judge hadn't called him. Had he not even placed at all? Was he last chair? His anxiety rose. The students were shifting to their assigned seats. Ray raised his hand. Sir, I think I missed my name being called. Ray McMillan.
Rayquan McMillan. Yep, there you are. Third chair.
He was third chair, first violin. His legs moved on their own, the associate concertmaster position. If the concert mistress and her stand partner, the number two violinist, left for any reason, if either got sick or broke a string or just decided to go home, Ray would be playing the solo. The responsibility of leading the orchestra would fall to him. He didn't think there was any chance of this happening, but still. Ray had to pass Mark Jennings three chairs back to get to his new seat, so he heard Mark mumble to one of his buddies, "What the fuck is going on? How the hell did that nigger beat me?" "You need to open your mouth when you speak," Ray told him. "Someone could mistake what you say for something, oh, I don't know, racist?" "Fuck you, Ray Ray." Ray grinned and took his seat as the associate concertmaster. By Sunday morning, they were ready. He understood now the joy of playing with a full orchestra, how the other players lifted him up, how his own notes blended and soared and twisted with the rest. Every time the conductor raised his baton, new joy blossomed in his chest. Each note felt special, a gift. At the end of the performance, they went into the dressing rooms to pack up their instruments. His stand partner whispered, eyes wide,
"You were incredible. I've never seen somebody so into the music before. It was really cool to watch. I think I learned a lot just sitting next to you."
Thanks, he said. "You too." But he couldn't remember even noticing her during the performance. Back down the narrow hallway, from dressing room to main auditorium, he and the other students headed out. The audience had come on stage. Most kids now held huge bouquets that their parents, glowing with pride, must have given them. Mixed in with the adults were men and women wearing blazers with university insignia on their left lapels, Duke Blue Devils, Appalachian State Mountaineers, and others he didn't recognize. Scouts, here to recruit students for their colleges. Ray paused, waiting to be acknowledged. Would they all come running to him? The associate concertmaster. Appalachian State passed him by. So did Duke. UNC looked at him vacantly and then headed toward a blonde girl who'd sat a few seats behind him. It was as if he were a human-shaped block of wood or a potted plant, something to be bypassed on their way to someone else.
Unaccosted, he made it to the front of the stage and was about to head down to the audience level and then on to the waiting buses outside when he heard his name. He turned, almost knocking over a cello case. It was Sean.
"Oh, hey, man," Ray said.
"I was looking for you. You sounded great today."
"Likewise," Sean said, "although I couldn't really hear you over all 12 million violins. We should keep in touch. Let me know what school you end up going to."
They exchanged emails.
"Great meeting you. Maybe we can catch up once school is out. If you see Janelle, tell her I said bye and that it was nice meeting her."
"Yeah, absolutely,"
Sean said, looking behind Ray at someone.
"Take care, man."
"Ray?"
He turned. Dr. Stevens, wearing a Markham University blazer, smiled from ear to ear.
"Dr. Stevens, hi."
"Hello. I hope I'm not being too out of line when I first say congratulations on a terrific performance, and an even bigger congratulations on your associate concertmaster seat. That's quite an accomplishment in itself, let alone for a first-time orchestra member."
"Thank you. I just did my best."
"I know you did. That's why I'm hoping you'll accept the university's offer. I'm authorized to offer you a full music scholarship to study with me."
The world seemed to slow for a moment, the auditorium lights contracting around her.
The scholarship would cover full tuition and room and board, but you'd have to pay for your own books and miscellaneous materials. February is a little late to apply, so we'd have to get you in the system right away. I'm authorized to waive your application fees if you apply before Thursday. Housing assignments don't begin until the summer, so you're okay on that front.
How does that sound? What do you think?
He tried to speak, but just kept opening and closing his mouth. Dr. Stevens's grin only widened, if that was possible.
"I know this may seem like a lot all at once. I understand that you might need to talk it over with your family."
"Yeah."
Hope and exhilaration fizzed in his veins, but his mom would never let him go. Dr. Stevens handed him two business cards, the university card she'd already given him, and the other for the admissions director.
"Is your family here? I'd love to meet them."
They couldn't make it."
"Sorry to hear that," she said. "Go home. Think about what I've said. Talk to your family. Email or call me when you make a decision, but don't wait too long. If we don't hear from you by the end of next week, I'll have to offer the scholarship to another prospective student."
She looked at him hard.
"This could be the start of a meteoric career for you, if that's what you want."
Yeah. Yeah, it's what I want. I need to talk to my mom, though."
"Thank you. I'll be in touch." "I hope so. Congratulations again."
She shook his hand and disappeared into the crowd. Outside, in the weak late afternoon light, kids and their families were moving on, shouting goodbye, the mournful thunks of car doors closing. He was one of only three students to ride the charter bus home. He stared out the window the entire way, thinking and trying not to think. His mother and the twins were in the living room. The twins, as usual, glued to their spots in front of the TV, his mom on her phone on the sofa.
"Your food is on the stove."
Their dinner plates, stacked with chicken bones, glistened greasily on the glass coffee table. He dropped the violin and his duffel in his room, went into the kitchen and made up his plate. Mashed potatoes, string beans, chicken breast. He put it in the microwave. Voices bounced around in his head.
"You need to find a real job. This could be the start of a meteoric career."
Down the hall to the bedroom. Something made him notice the pictures framed on the walls. Pictures of each twin over the past 3 years. His brother mugging for the camera in his baseball and basketball uniforms. His sister and a half dozen other little girls squashed into white tutus at the local community center's ballet recital.
There was only one of Ray, with his mom and dad, from when Ray was a baby. His mom wasn't smiling. Ray had always been the one his mother couldn't quite understand. Instead of playing basketball with the other uncoordinated prepubescent kids, he was up in his room, alone, practicing air violin with his IKEA headboard as a fingerboard. His mom never got to sit at the half-court line and gossip with her friends, whose kids were also on the team. She didn't want to go alone to an alien concert hall with a bunch of soccer moms wondering if she was lost. He lay on his bed. There was a crack in the left corner of the ceiling he'd never noticed before. The muted TV laughter itched his skin, as if it would leave scars. Talking to her might not be so bad. Maybe she'd be excited, happy for him. She didn't have to pay for anything. Water rattled in the pipes. The twins were in the bathroom getting ready for bed. A poster of Optimus Prime, Transformer, leader of the Autobots, clenching his metal fists. His corded muscles bulged reassuringly. If Optimus Prime could beat the crap out of Megatron, Ray could talk to his mother. Ray came out of his room. Mom, I need to talk to you. It's important.
What, boy?
She was typing. The concert was really good. I was one of the top violinists, and I got offered a scholarship.
Uh-huh.
Her phone chimed. She smirked at it, typed. Mom!
Who you yelling at?
I'm not yelling. I didn't know if you heard what I said. I got offered a scholarship today.
To where?
To Markham University.
Well, that's too bad. You're getting a job. I ain't paying for college.
This is a scholarship. A full scholarship. It would pay room and...
No.
What do you mean, no?
I said no. I ain't paying for nothing.
You don't have to pay for anything. It's a music scholarship. I just said that. It covers everything.
What did I just say?
You said no, but I think I'm going to take it.
You ain't taking shit. You going to get a job and help with these kids.
She mumbled something incoherent. Her phone chimed, and she looked at it. Mom? Hello? What is the big deal? I'll have a college degree.
In what?
She said, actually looking at him, eyes narrowed. Only then did he realize how furious she was.
In music. What's that going to do for anybody? Let me tell you something. You're just a kid. You don't need no college and no music. You need a job.
One of the professors thinks I can play in a major symphony.
Ha! You can't play in no symphony. I hate to tell you, but you didn't play all that good at your grandma's. You ain't good enough.
For a moment, neither of them spoke. I'm doing it, he said. She stood up suddenly, swift and sure, took two steps, leaned over him.
No, you ain't. You're getting a job.
He stood too, taller than her. So you're telling me that you'd rather me stay here and work for the next 10 years at Popeyes instead of going and getting a college degree? That doesn't make any sense.
Talk back one more time, and I'll slap the shit out of you.
This is unbelievable. I give you almost every cent I make.
And why?
So you can get a bigger TV?
What's after the TV?
I've begged you for years for a violin, but you say you can't afford it, and then you get your hair done.
All I've done is contribute. You got a better chance of making it in the NBA than you do making a living playing music. It's tough out there. You need to find something steady.
Like what? Popeyes? The hospital cafeteria?
Exactly. Something nice and steady that's gonna pay the bills.
Pay your bills, you mean? She smacked him, palm wide open, and he staggered as the backs of his legs hit the armchair, and he reached out to steady himself. His left cheekbone flamed.
Let me tell you something, she said. You gonna do what I say. I'm smarter than you, and you will never be able to get one over on me. Do you understand?
He held the left side of his face. The burn crept into his left eye.
You know that you can't make a living playing a violin. That old fiddle Mama gave you is about to fall apart as it is. You think them white people are gonna let you play in an orchestra? No. You ever seen a black man playing in an orchestra? No. There's a reason for that. Now I'm tired of hearing about this shit.
She sat down, stared at her phone again, snickered at it.
You won't have to hear about it anymore.
He stumbled around her, down the hall to his room. His face burned. Moments later, his mom went into her bedroom, talking on her phone loud enough for him to hear.
Then he said he was going to go to some college for violin. Yeah. Then he got smart. I slapped the shit out of him. That's what I did.
She went into her room, closed the door. He could hear her muttering, then a cackle long and drawn out. He pulled out his own phone, dialed. After the third ring came a voice, shaky, frail.
Hello?
The sound of a throat clearing, and then stronger.
Hello? Ray, that you?
Hey, Grandma, he said.
Ray, what's wrong? You okay?
I'm fine. Nothing's wrong.
He cleared his own throat, blinked hard. His left eye still stung, as if sleet were stinging the side of his face. He sat up straighter.
I'm sorry to call so late, but I had to tell you the good news.
Oh, I'm so glad you called me. What is it, baby?
Part 3. Treasure. Chapter 10. Janice, 14 months ago. He'd missed two calls from her already.
Ray,
Dr. Stevens said,
we need to talk.
What's going on?
Her voice sounded thin, strained.
Where are you?
In my room.
What's going on?
He stood up, the phone suddenly slick with his sweat. The textbook he was supposed to be reading slid to the floor. Outside, the March sky lowered cold and gray, with darker clouds shadowing the trees on the horizon, but the sun shone in a distant patch of blue. He leaned his forehead against the window, concentrating on the cold circle above his eyebrows. She rarely called him, and she never sounded like this.
Raekwon, I'm going to ask you a question, and I need you to be honest with me.
He swallowed. How would the accusation run? Someone's instrument stolen, when it was left in a storage room? A too high music history test score? So he must have cheated. A practice room vandalized? Had to be the black guy. He was so close to graduating.
Did I do something? Can you meet me outside the music building?
Sure, but it'll take me 15 minutes to get there.
I'll be waiting for you outside.
I'll meet you in your office.
No, just meet me outside.
She hung up without saying goodbye. His pulse pounded in his temples, and the sweat was cold in his armpits and between his shoulder blades. He threw on his coat and pulled his yellow jacket ski cap down across his brow. He was almost out the door before he remembered his ID card on the desk. The cool plastic felt somehow alien, too cold, shaped wrong, as he stuffed it into his pocket. He headed out into the weak afternoon sunshine. As promised,
She was waiting for him, pacing back and forth on the steps of the music building, hands in her pockets. Above her loomed ancient brick limestone lintels, arching into a medallion with 1907 in its center. These walls had always been a refuge for him. He knew every office, every practice room, every hallway. The floors vibrated from far-off arpeggios and the faint buzz of distant pianos. For 4 years, he had breathed in the aroma of cleaning solvent, the mustiness of old books, and the distant perfume from the vocal majors. That smell had become home to him. When she saw him, she stopped moving. He waved, but she didn't wave back. She was always, always smiling. It was one of the traits he found most endearing. It was as if there was some private joke that only the two of them shared, and they were a team, the two of them against whatever came their way, from a nasty assistant in the dean's office to a sluggish bartender who didn't seem eager to serve them. He'd never known an adult to treat him like this. Now her smile had vanished, and her hands were deep in her dark blue puffy jacket. "Will you please tell me what's going on?" he asked her. He'd been waiting for this moment for the past 4 years, ever since she'd approached him with that out-of-the-blue scholarship. The entire time he'd been here, he'd felt like a fraud, and that they were waiting to kick him out. Was Popeyes hiring? When he left Charlotte to go to college, he'd taken a series of buses to get to campus, carrying a $10 suitcase, his red duffel bag, and the still-new cheap violin case. He'd paid his mother her long-awaited rent and most of the bills, but still had saved $2,200 from playing gigs at night and working afternoons at the grocery store. His freshman roommate, a poli-sci major with blonde hair, blue eyes, and absolutely no interest in being friends, would smile and somehow quickly drift out of the room whenever Ray came in. Ray barely noticed. The music department consumed him. The first time he sat down in Music Theory 101, which Dr. Stevens was teaching, he realized how far behind he was. He didn't know how to name intervals or relative minors. All the other kids rattled them off without thinking. Never having taken private lessons, he'd missed basic techniques, double stops, playing in seventh position, and reading different clefs. As that first class ended, he wondered if he could get a full refund on his textbooks. They'd set him back $250. "Ray, can you wait a minute?" Dr. Stevens had called from the lectern that day. The rest of the class had filed out, the door closed behind them. He stood before her, the seats spreading behind him like abandoned cars in a parking lot. Now it would come. Now she'd tell him that she'd made a mistake, that he had to leave. And then she'd smiled, warm, friendly, welcoming. "I know you're feeling way behind," she told him, smiling that smile. How did she know? "It will take a while to get adjusted. But I'm here to help. You can do this." He could feel his misery unknot in his throat. "Don't get caught up in all the technical stuff," she said, looking up at him. "You'll learn it. I have every faith that you will. This is what you're not seeing. There's something special about your playing, and that's why you're here. It's called musicality." "What do you mean?" Hope soared in him. "Precision and technique can be learned," she told him. "That's just practice. A lot of practice, but it's still just practice. What we can't teach is how to make a musician actually connect, emotionally connect with the pieces he's playing. To really care about the music and let the music tell its story." "And I do?" "You do," she said. "You can't fake it. It's like always looking at a reflection of the sun in a puddle, and then all of a sudden seeing the sun itself. You're that sun, Ray." He laughed. Yeah, he said. "Sure." Her smile vanished. "I'm very serious," she said, holding his gaze. You have a lot of hard work ahead of you, but if you want this, you can absolutely do it. Do you want it bad enough?
You're 18 years old. You're trying to be callous, trying to be cool, trying to show that you don't care, because after all, that's the point, isn't it? To be detached? To be above it all? You can't let your guard down, because then someone might mock you, might call you a moron. And it's even worse when you're black, right? The only black music major, already only half as good as everyone else. So above all else, be cool, be nonchalant. Don't care.
Yes, he whispered. I want this.
He meant it body and soul. She nodded slowly.
I know. So own it. Do it. You can make it happen. You have it in you.
Okay, he breathed.
Good. Now go practice your double stops in the Bach. Tomorrow I want them sounding perfect.
He went to the practice room and practiced double stops for the next 4 hours. That first year of school, he stuck out uncomfortably.
He sucks, he once overheard two other music majors say. He only got in because he's black.
The first time Ray had to play in front of his studio, he was so nervous that he missed every high F, flubbed every run of the Kabalevsky violin concerto. One Thursday afternoon in mid-February, life felt particularly tough. In his lesson, he'd played Monti's Chartus especially poorly. The sweeping minor chords, the pining lift into hope, into desperation, into joy, catapulting into that quick, fast, danceable celebration of light and the wind across the water. It was all there. But its false harmonics just wouldn't come out. His left hand stopped working. He'd played the double stops terribly out of tune, and he played the rhythm in the adagio section incorrectly every time. Finally, the spiccato and sautier bowing wouldn't bounce at all. He threw his violin back into its case, stomped out of the studio. Dr. Stevens caught him on the stairs going down to the exit.
Hold on, she said, laying her hand on his arm.
She wasn't angry. She wasn't even disappointed. She just smiled as if this were a private joke between them.
Give me your violin for a sec. I'll show you how I used to practice this.
I'm never going to get it, he snarled.
Believe it or not, I had the same issues you're having now.
There on the stairwell, she tugged the violin case from his grip, pulled out his violin, and played the four troublesome measures over and over, starting very slowly and then increasing the tempo.
That's how to do it.
He couldn't believe how such a simple gesture, just slowing down the phrase, lifting his bow slightly, could fix such a complex problem. He nodded, but she was already going on to the harmonic section, eyes on him. She didn't say a word, pointed at her left hand with the bow, and slowly placed each finger into position. She arched each finger higher than normal, and he understood how to do it. Yes, he could do that. Chartas reverberated off the concrete walls and into his chest. Her playing was flawless. She handed him his instrument and bow. Drop the bow on the string. He dropped the bow from above his head. Nothing happened.
Again.
Again nothing. Finally, 6 or 7 attempts later, a magnificent sautier rang out. It would be nice to say that that was the last time discouragement overwhelmed him, but it wasn't. He often felt like giving up, but the feelings came less frequently. The moment in the stairwell cemented his belief that Dr. Stevens was watching out for him, always there to give him a little added support. They met frequently on Saturdays and some Sundays to give Ray extra lessons so he'd keep up with his classmates. Over many months, he learned her history,
which seemed as rarefied and impossible as the ruby-throated hummingbirds that sometimes whizzed around the trumpeter vines on the south side of the music building. She'd studied privately as a child with Dorothy DeLay from Juilliard and was one of a handful of black kids to go to summer music camps. Eventually, she was performing across the country with several prestigious degrees in tow. But it wasn't easy. She constantly fought the stigma of being a black woman, of not being the typical violin soloist. She auditioned for the Boston Symphony, was a finalist, but eventually they went with someone whiter, more conventional. She took a job teaching at Indiana University until Markham lured her away. Her resume was impressive, but her connections were even more so. She had friends in most major symphonies, had performed with many concertmasters, festival organizers, and others in the industry. But more important than all the name-dropping, she loved teaching and loved music. Ray couldn't believe how lucky he was to have found her. "We're here for a reason, to throw little torches out to lead people through the dark." At the end of every one-on-one lesson, she'd compliment him. It always made him uncomfortable, but eventually he didn't wince when she praised him. "You're my diamond in the rough. You may not have bionic fingers, but you're a born musician. Never forget that." Except for Grandma Nora, who was hours away and often only a disembodied voice on the phone, he'd never had anyone regularly support him, watch out for him daily. It was an odd, slightly uncomfortable feeling, as if he'd eaten too much, his belly secure and tight. He desperately wanted to please her, and that was an odd feeling too. He'd always performed for himself, and now he was performing for her too. It made all the difference knowing he was seen. At the end of his freshman year, the students played a convocation for the entire School of Music. 10 students played each week, and when it was his turn, Ray went fifth. He would play Chartas. He took a deep breath, told himself to put the Kabalevsky debacle behind him, and strode onto the stage. Dr. Stevens' lessons, the harmonics, the double stops, the sautier, felt ground into his fingers. He hurled himself in, giving the piece all of his soul. His body was on autopilot, and he could tell even as he played that this was vastly better than anything he'd ever performed before. The mournful opening notes gave way to sunlight on a park bench, to the glitter of water pouring endlessly from a waterfall on a very hot summer day. When the last note rang out, his listeners leapt to their feet. They called him back for 3 curtain calls. This is what he needed to do with his life. Over the summer, back home with his mother, his routine continued. Up at 6 a.m. to practice with his heavy practice mute in his room, all day working at the grocery store, evenings practicing more or playing in a couple jazz clubs, weekend weddings or parties, or anywhere else that was looking for a musician. Every couple weeks, he caught a bus to have summer lessons with Dr. Stevens. His mother did her best to ignore him, and he did his best to ignore her. By the middle of his sophomore year, he'd caught up with the top students in the studio, juniors and seniors, and surpassed them all. Soon, the rumblings he heard were not about him being the quota student, but that he received preferential treatment because he was black. In his junior year, when he beat Julie Asher, a curly-haired bubbly girl from Texas, in a seating audition, Julie started a petition to have Dr. Stevens removed as the violin teacher because she was helping Ray more than everyone else. Ray defended Dr. Stevens fiercely, and the petition went nowhere. In his junior year, Ray and a few students went out for pizza with Professor Harris, who taught music history and piano, and who'd listened to them practice that afternoon. After they ordered, Professor Harris leaned in toward Ray.
"Have you ever thought about applying to the Tchaikovsky competition?"
The restaurant was noisy. Ray thought he hadn't heard correctly. "Excuse me?" The man leaned in, repeated what he'd said. The Tchaikovsky competition. It was one of the most, if not the most, prestigious competitions for young musicians held every 4 years in Moscow. The winner and finalists usually walked away with recording deals and invitations to play worldwide with the best orchestras. Hundreds applied, and only a few dozen made it to the first round. Ray swallowed a chunk of breadstick which was suddenly rough in his throat.
When is it again?
It took place 2 years ago, Professor Harris said. You should really think about it. I honestly think you have a real shot. You have 2 years to get ready. You should look over the application materials, see what you need to enter. Talk it over with Professor Stevens.
Isn't that the competition where, like, no Americans have ever won? Ray said.
Well, Van Cliburn won the first one on piano back in the 50s, but you're right. It's rare that Americans make it that far. I think you should consider it, though. That sautier of yours is pretty incredible.
Thanks, Ray said, taking another breadstick and snapping it in half. I guess I'll think about it.
You have some time, Professor Harris said.
The conversation moved on, but Harris had lit a flame in Ray. He burned not only to apply to the competition, but to be good enough to actually qualify. The next day in his lesson, after he'd finished the Mendelssohn Concerto, he broached the topic with Dr. Stevens.
Do you know anything about the Tchaikovsky competition?
I'm glad you asked, she said, nodding slightly. You're definitely on a soloist's track, and that means competitions. That's the top of the food chain. You're not quite ready, but you could be.
You really think so?
I do. 100%. But there's a lot you have to do before you get there. You'll have to really increase your repertoire, and you need to dig into basic techniques, like double and triple stops. And you'd need to have a soloist's violin, but we have time for all that. You just stay focused.
She kept smiling, looking at him as if she were delighted he'd brought it up. From then on, he'd check out the competition's website, study past winners, follow the controversies over the judging, the various missteps that the classical music world brooded on. Americans were rarely chosen. A black American probably didn't even have a shot. But if he didn't apply, he wouldn't give them a reason to say yes. So quietly, just to himself, he set a goal. The Tchaikovsky competition in 3 years. It would mean he'd have to work even harder. And he loved the challenge. Senior year had turned into the best year of his life. He'd moved out of the dorms and into an apartment he shared with two other music students. He was concertmaster of the College Symphony Orchestra. He played in the community orchestra. He played jazz gigs every other weekend with a combo that played close to campus, and he worked part-time behind the counter at a local bagel shop. In the spring, he would prepare for major orchestra auditions. Dr. Stevens had pulled strings to find the most promising auditions on the East Coast and some in the Midwest. So when she said that it was time he had a concert-level instrument, he immediately agreed. Grandma Nora's beat-up old fiddle wasn't going to cut it. Luckily, hidden away in Charlotte was Fisher Luthiers, a musical instrument store and repair shop that was one of the best in North Carolina. Ray had been in a couple times with his string repair class. Dr. Stevens drove them out one Friday afternoon. They'd made an appointment ahead of time. Jacob Fisher, call me Jacob, son, don't call me Mr. Fisher, was waiting behind the counter and came out to meet them in the middle of the showroom floor. A grizzled man with a tonsure surrounded by wild, wiry black and gray hair, a hooked nose, thin lips, a back hunched from years of bending over a work table, he'd seemed daunting each time Ray had met him, and today was no exception. He shook both their hands, called Professor Stevens, young lady, and was deferential to them both. This was a far cry from the music shop in the Georgia Mall years before. Fischer had heard Ray play several times.
Your Brahms A major sonata reminded me of Nigel Kennedy at your age.
Wow. Thanks, Mr. Fischer. That's so nice. Ray was getting better at accepting compliments.
Jacob. And I mean it.
Dr. Stevens explained that Ray would soon be making the audition rounds and needed a violin that was up to the task. Fischer led them over to the violins that hung like hourglass-shaped jewels on the wall.
Try this one on for size,
he said to Ray, reaching for a tiger-striped, honey-colored beauty with mother-of-pearl inlaid pegs. He lifted it from its rack, extended it to Ray, who grasped it cautiously. Ray slid his bow across the strings, tuned the D string, it was slightly flat, and played an A major scale all on the G string to get the feel of it. Then he launched into the third movement of the Mendelssohn Concerto, the vast sound reaching up from the ground and growing leaves and blossoms. The tone on the E string seemed to float from his chest, not from the instrument at all. He closed his eyes and let the violin serenade him.
That's what a high-level violin can do, Dr. Stevens told him. And that's why you need one.
Mr. Fischer, Jacob, nodded.
That sounded most impressive, young man. That's the kind of instrument you should have.
How much is it? He was afraid to ask. He wanted it desperately.
This little beauty is $36,000, he said. It's a Eugene Lehman from 1959. It's actually a steal at this price. In New York, you'd probably pay $100,000 for it.
Ray swallowed. That's what I was afraid of. Gently, he handed the layman back to Fischer. It may be a bit much for me.
He needs something top tier, though, Dr. Stevens said. You can see how much talent he has. Audition season starts in May, and he has a shot at some very interesting possibilities. We need to find him something that's more affordable but will showcase his skills.
They spent the next 2 hours trying various instruments. Ray kept circling back to a 1997 Rinaldi. It was definitely a soloist's instrument, with only two previous owners. The sound was as pure as light and easily filled the shop. At $5,200, it was a steal, but still vastly more than he wanted to pay. He had just over $8,000 in his savings account, so it was possible. But that was money he planned to live off, to pay rent and to travel to auditions. He'd have very little left.
Are we sure that mine can't be fixed? He said.
Pop-Pop's fiddle still rested on the counter, where he'd deposited it when they'd come into the store. He'd long ago replaced the alligator skin case with a lighter hard case that had much more padding, as well as four bow compartments. The alligator skin case he'd wrapped carefully in a garbage bag and stowed beneath his bed.
Let's take a look.
Fischer opened the case, pulled out Pop-Pop's fiddle, glanced at it.
This looks like early factory made, right off the assembly line. You'd be investing in a new fingerboard, new bridge, fitting the pegs. At the end of the day, I don't think it would be worth my time or your money.
It's not factory made, Ray said. It's been in my family for more than 100 years. When I first got it, I had one repair job done. Maybe that's what you're looking at.
It's a filthy mess, Jacob said.
Despite Ray's best polishing efforts, the violin was still whitish from decades of unremoved good luck dust. Jacob pulled out a bottle of solvent, dabbed a little on a cotton swab, rubbed it on the violin's back, and the rosin magically disappeared. He dabbed the cotton swab in a few more places, front and back. He slipped behind the counter into a back room and returned with several tools: calipers, screwdrivers, magnifying glasses, a jeweler's loop. He examined the violin front and back, looking into the F-holes with a portable light.
You're right.
The craftsmanship is good. Very good. You see how the sides flare and the feminine winding on the scroll? See the shape of the back? How it bows and how it's solid, not two pieces? Even underneath all the grime, it's definitely Italian. Carefully, he removed more built-up rosin. Nice underlying varnish, actually. Maybe if it were cleaned up, I could better assess it. He pulled out a slender tape measure, took several measurements. The dimensions? He looked at Ray. They're very interesting. You might have something here.
Can it be brought up to a soloist level?
Dr. Stevens asked.
I don't know.
Fisher paused.
Maybe.
He turned it over and over.
Yes, maybe. I think it could be. You're right and I'm wrong. It's actually a nice instrument. There's a bit of warping, but I think I can correct it. Whoever did this repair work,
he gestured,
did a terrible job, but that's easily fixed. The question is whether it can really be restored to the way it should play.
How much do you think it will cost to try fixing? Ray asked.
Once the top comes off, I'll have a better idea. I can tell you right now that the inside is really dirty, and the grime on the varnish alone is a job in itself. The soundpost might need to be replaced.
And the bridge and the pegs, Ray said. Fisher waved that away.
That's just cosmetic. This old beauty needs someone to really pay attention to her, really clean her up and bring her back. That takes time. Let's say $1,500.
Goodness, Dr. Stevens said.
But we're not even sure if it will be at the level of at least the Rinaldi when you're done?
Correct.
Ray took one longing look at the Rinaldi, tempting him from the wall. There really was no question. A tiny figure in a pink housecoat, her hair in curlers and her hands on a walker, stood behind him, just out of sight. If he turned quickly enough, perhaps he'd catch a glimpse of her. Perhaps he'd hear her,
"Oh, baby."
Again. Okay. Let's do it, he said. Do you need a down payment for fixing mine?
Ray, you sure?
Dr. Stevens asked. Yeah, he said. I'm sure. If it can't be fixed, maybe I can buy the Rinaldi instead. He rummaged in the violin's compartment for a pencil, wrote his name on the side of the fingerboard.
Why are you doing that? Jacob asked.
Even though she'd vouched for Mr. Fisher, Dr. Stevens had told him in the past about dicey violin dealers.
You can't trust them. They appraise, repair, and sell instruments. Huge conflict of interest.
This old fiddle is really special to me, even if it can't be fixed. No offense, but I'll feel more comfortable if I know I marked it. Better safe than sorry. He'd given Jacob the violin more than 2 weeks ago. Now, standing in front of the music building where Dr. Stevens had summoned him, he wasn't sure what he'd agreed to. Around them, the March wind blew raw and miserable, but Ray could barely feel it.
Jacob Fisher called me this afternoon, Dr. Stevens began.
Why wouldn't he call me? What's wrong?
He called me because he's known me for a long time, and this is a very unusual situation.
Unusual? How?
Ray?
She took a breath.
He thinks the violin is 18th century Italian.
Three families in Italy were renowned during that time for making the most exquisite, most expensive violins in the world. The Amatis, the Guarneris, and most famous, the Stradivaris. These violins were worth tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes millions. Ray waited for her to burst out laughing. She didn't.
What are you talking about?
You think it's a Stradivarius?
It's a serious possibility.
The entire situation struck him as stupidly absurd. Pop-Pop's fiddle? Seriously? He sat down on a bench along the path, put his forehead in his hands, closed his eyes.
Look, it's cold out here.
If this is your way of telling me I have to practice more, I get it.
I'm not joking. I've known Jacob for a long time. He called me to tell me that it might be something special. I want you to take it to a top appraiser in New York.
She sat next to him, spoke more gently.
Tell me everything you know about it.